So please take your seats, and we're ready to start with our next session. Traditionally, one of the most liked sessions during our CCNSO meeting, CCTLD News. Hush! Patrick, please join us here at the table. And today's CCTLD News session will start with a presentation from .pt, Portugal, with a very intriguing title, Implementing a Multi-Stakeholder Model at .pt. And as you all know, Winston Churchill once said that democracy is the worst form of government except for all the others. I think if he lived our days, he'd say that multi-stakeholderism is the worst form of governance except for all the others. So I'm really interested to know how .pt succeeded in implementing the model. So the floor is yours, Marta.
Okay. Thank you. Hi, everyone. It's a pleasure for me to be here and to have this opportunity to talk about the implementation of the multi-stakeholder model in .pt, in our registry. So, let's start. I have a problem here. So, let's start. Oh, well, it is our story. Well, from 88 to 2013, FCCN was the national registry for .pt. Well, FCCN was a private foundation, and that private foundation managed the .pt and was as well responsible for the management of the national education network. So at the beginning of 2013, as you can see, DNS was separated from FCCN when the latter was integrated in the public institute. Well, that public institute is FCT. FCT is a foundation as well, but it is an institution who is part of the structure of the Ministry of Education in Portugal. So the model was initially proposed by the Portuguese government, simply reduced the management of the .pt to one player, that institution that I was talking about, FCT. So this caused, as you can imagine, a widespread buzz in the community, and the community felt kind of obliged to openly state that we didn't agree with the model that was proposed by the Portuguese government that managed who simply reduced the management of the TLD to one player, the Portuguese government. So, in other words, by that time, we struggled to achieve a model that would allow us to manage .pt in a flexible and participative and efficient way. Well, in the end, we did set up with a non-profit association, which is the DNS.pt, and the delegation made by IANA to FCCN in 1988 was transferred to this association. So we used to say that it was an opportunity to make a dream come true and to create a new independent and a multi-stakeholder association where everybody could have a voice, okay? Well, it's again the idea of the dream come true in a few months. So looking back, here's the timeline that we used to present. So in February 2013, the Portuguese government are pursued of the importance of keeping .pt private and independent. In March 2013, we invited the technical community, the internet community and the technical community to join this project. In April of the same year, of course, the law that guarantees the independence of .pt was published. So in May, we had the formal constitution of the association, and we start our activity in June. So at that time, well, actually as nowadays, it was important to have the public acceptance, okay? And for instance, in June 2030, we had the Eurodig event in Lisbon, and we organized a parallel event there, and Fadi was invited to join the event, and he was very supportive about our model. Well, I'm sorry, we have here one problem. Well, I lost my... Well, okay, looking back again for my slides, who came back again. So who are we? Those are the founders of the association, the Portuguese Association for Consumer Protection. First, ACEPI, which is the Portuguese Association of Electronic Commerce and Interactive Advertising. This association represents as well the registrars in Portugal and the ISPs. So, and then the third one, that institution that I was talking about, who represents the Portuguese government. So this is our structure, our organizational chart, so which gathers the government, the registrars, the internet service providers, and as well the consumers. I'm sorry, because I'm having here a problem. Okay, and we have an advisor council as well. A special note to our advisor council. This council has several key stakeholders. What I mean by key stakeholders are several representatives of trademarks, companies, lawyers, engineers, authors, internet security, and so on. So this gathers a huge representation of the internet community in Portugal. And again, we used to say that now everybody has a voice here. So the founders of the associations are represented on the board of directors, and the members of the advisory council advise, support, and participate in a way in the definition of the strategy of the .pt. So the proposal of the association is to manage and to operate and maintain the top-level domain. So thereby, of course, complying with the law, with the principles of transparency, publicity, the statutes, and so on. So it is a clear mission, I suppose. So this is our team. At the moment, we are only 14, and you can see this was a team that came from FCCN, so everybody came and joined this new institution. So, well, reactions. Looking back again and trying to understand what were the reactions and the impact of this change. So the registrants did not feel the difference. The service didn't have any interruptions and had remained operational, so it was okay for that. And the registrars as well, they welcomed the change and kept the service as before. All the providers maintained the conditions of the contracts that we had with previously with the FCCN. And our employees, as I told you, choose to change and are still excited about this new challenge. So how are we today? As at least September, our total number of registered names stood at almost 700,000. So for Portugal, we have 10 million of people, so it's not that bad. So we have 150 registrars working with us. And as you can see, the registrations continue to grow as in the past year. So the final note here is that looking for the last information that Center reported to us, .pt recorded the highest net growth over the 12 previous months at around 15%, which is good as well. So I chose this final topic that I would like to highlight here. As of November 3rd, it will be possible to register two character domains at .pt. I do apologize. I brought you this picture. This picture is in Portuguese. This picture is a part of the campaign that we just launched. It means something like that it's a kind of a play on words. It means that be your former or ex-boyfriend and keep him forever, because now it will be possible to register www.x.pt. So ex-former, well, it's a kind of a play on words. Last but not least, I end up my presentation with this short video. We produced this video for the Center Awards. We were nominated for the Center Awards. We didn't win, but we were happy with it. And I'm sure that this film must be much interesting than all my presentation. I hope you enjoy it, and thank you for your attention, okay?
There is a little country called Portugal that, despite its size, has a very long history of discoveries and conquests. The Portuguese people were always brave and determined, and its adventurous spirit remains today. At the beginning of 2013, the former .pt registry, FCCN, merged with a public entity, FCT. The model that was initially proposed by the Portuguese government simply reduced the management of the .pt to one player. We have struggled to achieve a model that allows it to be managed in a flexible, participative, and efficient way. Thus, we managed to create a private association, DNS.pt, and developed a new model, multi-stakeholder, which gathers the government, the registrars and internet service providers, and the consumers. DNS.pt is a joint effort to best serve the internet and the Portuguese people. We count on FCT.
This new multi-stakeholder governance and membership model is more efficient and flexible.
We count on ASEPI.
The PT makes its move from government-only control to a multi-stakeholder governance model. ASEPI is proud to be part of this new chapter.
We count on DECO.
The NSPT is acting as a pivot, added potential stakeholders and key players, and its area of intervention.
And we count on the internet community.
We had a dream, and that dream became true. A new, independent and multi-stakeholder governance model for .pt.
The world believes in us.
Is that you made sure multiple stakeholders are part of the DNSPT organization. That this is not only government, that it's not only business, that everybody has a voice. They will come, they will contribute their input to the table. And I will watch DNSPT closely.
We believe too. Join our waves as McNamara does and experience an adventure at .pt.
Thank you very much, Marta. I always watch this wave with horror. But now I watched and I thought, it reminds me of our CCTLD community trying to solve the issue around Ayana stewardship transition. So, any questions? Any questions? No questions? Then I have a question. Fadi promised to watch you closely. How does it work?
What do you mean? The fact that Fadi wants to watches he said closely?
In the movie, he said, I will watch very closely.
I don't know. You have to ask him.
Okay, so you don't feel being watched. Okay, that's good. And of course, it's quite clear that in tyranny you can operate in more efficient, more efficient and cheaper way. Are you still happy with your choice?
Yes. We just celebrate 1 year of activity as a separate entity, and we believe that it is still a challenge for us. So, because for the past 25 years we had FCCN on our back, I can say that, we had a huge team that worked for FCCN and worked at the same time for the registry. And now we used to say that we are alone there. We had a team of 80 persons, and now we are 14, and we need to manage it alone. So it's still a challenge for us, but it's been good because we had the support of the community and the registrars. At the beginning, we thought that it could be kind of strange to have the registrars with us, providing their opinions, being in the board, being represented in the board. And now we believe that they used to bring us good opinions, good feedback from the community, and we feel that we are close to the community than before. So that is a good point.
But haven't you noticed that any of the parties trying to take over? So in multi-stakeholder model,
that's the danger.
You must listen to others and take into account not only your position. So you don't sense that. So everything goes. So everybody has
for
accepted
now,
the model.
Yeah, okay. For now, the our experience, I would say yes. It's been working very well, and we work together in a very efficient way. We hear each other, we get the opinions among the community, and for the moment, it is being quite interesting, and to share the experience, to share knowledge, but for the moment.
It would be interesting to hear an update in a year or two.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you very much, Marta.
Thank you.
Oh, you have a question. Yeah. No. Shh. We have a question. Yeah.
Hi. I'm Carlos from Nick, Argentina. When you have to make decisions, specific decisions about something, how do you vote it? You have take votes, or how in which way to do it?
Do you mean the strategic decisions, for instance?
Yeah.
Well, we have a board where all the stakeholders are represented, and they are all free to give their opinions and to share ideas and to try to convince the other members of the board of the good way to follow. So it's like in a common board.
It has to be unanimous.
Yeah. It is.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
We have one more question. Please pass to the back.
I'm Shehu from .ng, Nigeria. You said that DNS.pt is private and independent. How do you handle the funding? Do you have government funding? Since you are a little bit, you're just starting, right? Now, how do you fund the registry? Funding.
The funding of the.
The operations of the registry.
Well, the domain, the registration of the domains are paid, so.
So it's purely independent.
Yes, no, completely independent in all senses.
Okay, great. Well done.
So thank you very much. Now, so next presentation we have from regional organizations, and Patrick Miles will give an update on a survey run by four of the regional organizations regarding national legislation and how 70 of CCTRDs who took part in the survey responded and how they interact with the So Patrick, maybe you could start by giving a short introduction.
Okay.
While we solve technical
issues. Yeah, okay. We don't have slides up yet, but... sorry? Yeah. Good morning, everybody. My name's Patrick Miles. For those who don't know me, I usually am involved in the CCTL community quite a lot, but I'm not often in the CCNSO at an ICANN meeting. So... today, I'm going to replace the usual RO presentations that Centre and APTLD and LACTLD and AFTLD provide, giving updates to their regions, and instead I'm going to give a little update or an overview about this survey that we took a few months ago between the regional organisations called CCTLDs and National Legislation. Can I go forward here? That one. Okay, all right. Sorry. It's going to be about numbers, so I'm sorry there's not going to be big waves like the Portugal presentation, but it'll be a bit dry, but hopefully it'll provide some interesting topic for you to discuss and maybe lead to something else. So what the survey looked at was essentially sort of three areas. There were the legal structure of CCTLDs across the globe, the extent to which those CCTLDs are affected by their national legislations, and in contrast to that, to their involvement in ICANN and how ICANN policy might affect them. The survey also looked at local presence requirements for CCTLDs and how CCTLDs interact with their governments. So we thought it might sort of give some insights. Particularly, I just came in a bit late to the last session with the board, but it seems that if there's some sort of marketing of CCTLDs or pumping up the notion of CCTLDs in the ICANN world, maybe some of this data might become a bit interesting over time. So, yeah, hopefully it gives you something to think about. Okay, so, yeah, as I mentioned, it was initiated by the regional organisations AFTLD for Africa, APTLD Asia-Pacific, Centre for Europe, and LACTLD for the Latin and Caribbean area. And the survey ran between July and September this year, and it received 76 responses from CCTLD operators across those organisations, including these ones. I hope everything can be seen on those slides. It looks like it. So thanks to everybody, by the way, who did respond to that survey. It was very encouraging to receive all those responses. We haven't done too many global collaborative surveys like this where we've asked the same questions to all the CCTLDs that we could get to. So it was a good indication of interest level, and hopefully we can see this again. The first question, or one of the early questions in the survey, related to the legal structure of CCTLD operators. So there you can see what the situation is. In blue, you have the private sort of sector CCTLDs, which is most of them. So you have associations, foundations, cooperatives, and private companies. And then you have a small percentage which are linked to the government, or they're the regulator, or they're state-owned. And then you have another distinction of academic institutions. So it gives a bit of context about what the CCTLDs, what kind of community we are as far as how our legal structures are formed. On to the question of local presence. We asked the question of what kind of local presence requirements that you... What you require of your registrants, and we found that about half of CCTLDs have at least some form of local presence requirements that they put on their registrants to be within the country, and in most cases that involves a postal address of one of the admin or billing or tech contacts. As you see, it's sort of about half and half in most CCTLDs, but it does vary across the different regions. Now, this slide just talks a little bit about an article that was recently in Circle ID, giving a bit of focus to location being brought back as a something that's a bit more in the spotlight because of the new GTLDs and particularly the GeoTLDs. So because they're coming about, it's maybe a bit interesting. They might be a little bit aligned to CCTLDs in the nature of being geographic. So it's interesting to keep these in mind. And there it talks about some principles about adjacency and isolation and resistance. And resistance relates a little bit to local presence as it means what the article is suggesting is that the larger the distance to the store, the less likely the consumers are to shop there. So signalling some form of local presence might have some sort of value. So, of course, CCTLDs intrinsically have a local presence aspect to them in that they're country codes. But having that, you know, the balance between more or less local presence requirements might be something to think about and look about how other CCs are managing in that area. This slide talks about the basis for carrying out the CCTLD. So we ask the question, what do you consider the basis to be for carrying out your CCTLD? And we gave a range of choices, a lot being relating to governments, things like national legislation or decrees or some sort of agreement with your government, or ICANN-related stuff. So do you have an MOU? Do you have a contract? Do you have an exchange of letters? So that's interesting considering the last conversation about what Chris Despain was saying about exchange of letters. We did notice there was a lot of people with exchange of letters. But whether that's binding or what the implications of that is another question. So the survey found that 54% base, at least in some parts, the reason why they carry out the CCTLD on some form of government-related instruments such as a national legislation or a contract with the government or some sort of directive. And 69%, so a greater percentage, have some sort of involvement with ICANN, whether that be a contract, an MOU or an accountability framework. And from what I understand, the accountability framework is something that's not perhaps fully understood. And then, of course, some people just base it purely on their original letters from John Postel.
Patrick, sorry, please bear in mind that not everyone is native speaker.
Sorry, I'm speaking a little bit quickly, maybe. Sorry. Okay, I'll speak a bit slower. This slide... one word at a time. It's not nerves, it's just, I don't know. I've got 10 minutes, apparently, or 15 minutes, maybe, I'm not sure.
8 left.
Oh, okay, 8, right. So this slide breaks down the previous slide, what I was talking about with if you're in the government or you're linked to the government or you have some sort of arrangement with ICANN. Now, the government is on the left there, your left, and there's about 27% of CCTLDs who only base something on a link with their government, whether it be a legislation or a government contract or whatever. There's a larger percent who base their reason to be in with some sort of ICANN agreement, and I'll go into that in a minute. And then there's a lot of people in the middle, so it gives you an idea about the breakup of how CCTLDs are defining themselves. Again, this goes a little bit further into the what type of government relation or the scope of the instrument that is being used. In this case, we broke it down into service policies and reporting requirements and accountabilities and tender and financial status. So, of course, there's different kinds of reporting requirements there, and that gives a bit of an idea who has to do what. But again, as you see, the 28% is sort of a lower percentage of people who have these sort of requirements. And that, again, breaks it down a little bit even further, talking about, who's got what kind of instrument influencing them. So as you can see in the green ones down below, the exchange of letters is the most type of common situation that CCTLDs have with ICANN. And from all accounts, it's a pretty low on its binding requirements, on its bindingness, if that's a word, probably not. Okay, so the question asked, this is a separate question asked, where is the CCTLD explicitly mentioned? And we set a range of choices from operating agreements to legislations to trade agreements, special taxes, critical infrastructure agreements. And as you see, the numbers are relatively low, although around 60% have some sort of situation where their CCTLD is mentioned somewhere. But most of the time it's an operating agreement. And then enabling legislations and decrees and things. And it might be interesting to know, I was talking to a member that the next question might be, wonder how many provisions in these legislations or agreements allow for the government to come in and re-tender the CCTLD or take it back for whatever reason. That might be the next interesting thing to know. So it's something to think about. We broke it down by category, and we talk about here what type of CCTLDs are within each of those categories. So in enabling legislation, most of those CCTLDs are actually the government agency or their regulator. In terms of trade agreements, there's not too many of them. They're usually in academic institutions. Again, here we run into always the problem of definitions as well. So what do you consider to be some sort of trade agreement and also even in operating agreements? In operating agreements, we found most CCTLDs are actually in private sector organisations. Again, just keep in mind that the numbers are relatively low here. The next question we asked, how the CCTLDs are communicating with their government. It was found that most people are very, very informal with the way that they talk to their government. They don't consider to have, to be too formal in their relationship, but they do have informal meetings and calls. And this does not seem to change if you're a private or you're a public company. So there, if you said 78% for private CCTLDs and 77% for public CCTLDs, the most common form of engagement with the government is actually just informal meetings and informal calls and chats. We also asked some questions about their interaction with the GAC representative of their country, and half CCTLDs stated that their interaction with the GAC is considered frequent, and a further 22% consider it to be sometimes. And there was another question about, do you have some sort of internet caucus of a group of politicians from either side of your government that have a keen interest in internet topics? This was not a particularly easy question to answer, perhaps, but it was considered not a whole lot of interest from their governments in internet-related issues there. Or they don't know about it, at least anyway. So in summary, just over the slides that we just went through, just to give you an overview of everything, the most CCTLDs are in the private sector. About half of them have some sort of local presence requirements. So generally, CCTLDs we're considering to be relatively autonomous and with limited interference from government. And then it goes a bit more into my screen is cutting out here. About half of them have some sort of a situation where the CCTLD is linked to a government legislation for its reason for carrying out the CCTLD. And then a lot more have ICANN agreements and MOUs and exchanges of letter. So what we're sort of thinking about with that survey is that, well, first of all, it's going to be available in the four regions. So each of the CCTLDs will have a report on their particular region, drilling down a little bit more detail about who's doing what in their region. And we're sort of offering the possibility to extend an invitation if you'd like us to dig a bit deeper into one of these topics from the survey. We have a platform now. We're talking pretty well amongst the regional organisations, and we have some data sharing agreements going on, so we can do a bit of work there for you. And as you see, we had 76 responses for this survey, so it's an encouraging thing to have happened, and we hope it continues. And if there's something in that survey that can help you or your business or generally the broader CCTLD community inform some sort of decisions or other discussions that you might have with IANA transition, for example, or whatever else, the information is there and most of you have it at your disposal. So that concludes the presentation, and I have 1 minute left, so we have 1 minute of questions if you have...
More minutes.
Oh, okay, so we have more minutes of questions, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Patrick. So, any questions?
It will be on our website.
I sent them a bit late in, that's my fault.
So, any more questions? If not, thank you very much, Patrick.
Thanks.
And now we move to our next presenter, now according to the list. I think, Dave, if you want
I'll
to present...
I'll just do it from here, if we can just get it connected.
So, so our days, we most of us notice that there's a slowdown in the growth of our domain names, and therefore the more and more registries are looking into ways to diversify their risks and diversify their services and offer new possibilities to their customers, well, just trying to improve the cash flow, basically. So, .ca will tell us more about services they're developing and how they're dealing with these issues.
Thank you, Katrina. So about 18 months ago, the board of directors at CIRA, together with the energetic team that worked there, came up with a strategy document that said our three-year vision is to move beyond just running the .ca registry, and that is what is our job number one, safe, stable, secure, but also start exploring, developing, and launching new products. So the next couple slides is a quick summary of the lessons learned over the last 18 months and some of the activities that we've done inside our hallways. This is where I get messed up.
Down the bottom left?
There we go. Click. Got it. All right. So the world of a CC registry is a good one, yet it's maybe somewhat a simple one in that there's a highly skilled group of individuals that focus on IT and operations. There's a known set of channel partners that we all meet with on a regular basis at ICANN meetings and other meetings, and the relationships have been established, and they go beyond business. They're also personal. We have some experts in compliancy and policy. In running the CC, it's a very complicated world of who registers names and the life cycle associated with those names. So compliance and policy definitely reigns supreme. Typically, there's one product, your country domain name. There's one price sold on an annual or multi-year basis, and it's a universe that is very familiar and known. That was certainly the case at .ca, and when we started looking at other services that we could provide, we kind of looked at them across three areas. So registry extensions, so these were things inside our strike zone that we could easily roll out. Other CCs or other GTLD registries were doing them as well, so there was a known implementation model. Examples of that would be a registry lock product, which I know many people in the room here have looked at and or have completed. maybe a name spinning engine so that our registrars could offer alternative CC names or .ca names when the name that they're looking for is registered, or even DNSSEC as a technology. It's an implementation, but it could also be viewed as a product as you try and roll it out across the channel, the registrants and the registrars, the ISPs. So those are the extensions that would be an examples of ones that we looked at. Market extensions are a little different. They're things we know about, things we do, but it's repositioning that knowledge into a product that the market may or may not be interested in. So that could be registry services for other top-level domains. So that would take what is your single-tenant platform that runs your CC and turn it into a multi-tenant platform, be adaptable for domain life cycles, be adaptable for policy, be adaptable for billing. It may also be managed DNS services. So you're involved in your zone file for your top-level domain. How would you extend some of that knowledge and those services and those name servers to help manage other people's second-level domain or top-level zone? Also, another area where many CISOs are very active in is the systems which notify and monitor malware, bad actors inside our universe, and that knowledge could also be promoted to small, medium businesses or large businesses and done as a service. The third area we looked at was technology extensions, and these are the ones where we're a registry. We're a big database that is indexed by a key of some type. And where else can we play inside our sovereign state or inside the global economy? And this could include directory services for your single sign-on capabilities, whether that's inside universities or hospitals or large entities, and some level of authentication on user IDs. And I know some of the people in this room have looked at that. It may also be a business directory where you support your country's business indexing and online with a knowledge base that's easily accessible and searchable. Or you've launched into provides some thought leadership around the state of the internet inside your country, and that would be speeds and feeds provided by ISPs, sources of how they do that, whether they're DNSSEC enabled, V4, V6, so on and so forth. So really providing some data and thought leadership. The interesting thing about each one of these services is they come with their own set of challenges. So registry extensions are fairly low risk. We know the world that we operate in. Others have done it. And it's a good idea to investigate without substantial amount of capital, time, or energy. Market extensions, they're question marks. It's usually around servicing the evolving market right now. There's a lot of new players and existing players in this space, and how successful you can be in that space is going to be driven by your tenacity, your knowledge, and your ability to offer unique service. Technology extensions, you're usually breaking new ground. You're not farming a field here. You're hunting. You're doing something new for your country, or for a set of internet users, and they come with their own set of challenges. Why a new product strategy? Well, I'm kind of preaching to the choir here, I believe, but every registry's market has changed, and there's more changes to come. So with 1,000 new names, and Google is a registry and a registrar, I don't think anybody imagined that 3 to 5 years ago. Assyrian Army is known for cyber crimes and redirecting domains and hijacking DNS. The growth in our economy, in our domain space, has slowed. The days of double-digit growth are no longer. Existing channels are distracted. So the onslaught of these new names and trying to position them, trying to market them, trying to upsell them has created definitely a distraction factor. That means that maybe our country code is not in the top 5 choices, maybe even not top 10 choices anymore in their sales funnel. And community and city TLDs are showing momentum. So it's audience participation time now. What is the number one new GTLD by numbers registered in Germany? Stop Berlin. How about the UK? Dot London, after 8 days of general availability, it's the number one. If we take the purple-suited guys out of the equation for the US, that's a dot XYZ if you haven't seen them, what is the number one in the US? Dot NYC. Japan? Dot Tokyo. So all of these names have just launched again. NYC 8 days ago, London a couple months ago, sorry, I reversed that earlier. And they're already gaining momentum from a registration count in their sovereign countries. The other thing about looking at new services, a CC registry, is the benefits can certainly outweigh the risks. And that's what we've seen at CIRA. If you look at that new product strategy, there's the obvious benefits that come along with launching new product to your marketplace. There's a potential for new revenue. There's new customer relationships, even talking to the end user rather than your channel. And there's the opportunity to develop new channels. These are the obvious ones. There's also new technology that you introduce into your hallways. So at CIRA, we had about 15 new technologies, how we gathered data, how we developed code, how we presented data, how we monitored systems. All of that is a learning opportunity. There's new processes that get developed, how we bill. Maybe it's not on the annual basis, but maybe it's a monthly basis, how we support. Maybe it's not through a product support team that focuses only on domains, but it focuses on other things. So new processes, our muscles are flexed and worked. There's new marketing opportunities. So we're in trade shows with our new products. We do brochures with our new products. We provide some thought leadership to the community with new products. So marketing engines do get to rev up and operate on additional cylinders that they didn't know they might have had. There's R&D opportunities for your development team. So we're not always tweaking the 5.9 registry, but we're actually exploring new technologies and new ways of developing products that may be open source based or maybe different levels of efficiency. So we've seen that the R&D capabilities have been great for our development team. There's advancement and learning for staff. So staff have appreciated these opportunities and the ability to not only advance amongst groups, but also learn new technologies. And recruitment is a lot easier when you're doing multiple things with multiple technologies in multiple markets. So CIRA, a case study, we do an annual survey of the engagement of our staff and what they're motivated by, what they're not happy with, so on and so forth. In between the two annual surveys, we did launch and initiate development and launch 4 new product ideas. So one survey, there was no new product except a glimmer in someone's eyes. The next survey, a year later, we had 4 done. That was our registry lock product, domain name spinning alternatives, domain name service for our registrar channel, big and small, an Anycast DNS service with some level of DDoS mitigation. That's our D-Zone Anycast DNS, and registry services for existing and new top-level domains. So that's taking our single-tenant engine and moving it into a multi-tenant environment. And the survey results show a very positive impact of new products onto our corporate culture. Now, I will say that there's many other aspects that go into this increase in engagement and corporate culture, but certainly new products contributed to it. The engagement on the employees in certain areas increased by close to 20%. So we had we had a very engaged staff to start with, and in certain areas, it even increased. 91 of CIRA staff answered the story question of our survey with a, given the opportunity, I tell others great things about working here. Very, very happy staff environment. 82 of them said, I hardly ever think about leaving this organization to work elsewhere. So we're seeing an incredible bounce, very motivated and happy staff environment. In fact, as they, as everybody latches on to our new culture of velocity and engagement, it's interesting to see that even the feedback that staff provided on things like benefits, pay, and retirement savings, which haven't changed over the last year and didn't change, were very positively received and actually had a 10 to 15% bump on how they were received. So in summary, we've had a really nice ride at .ca over the last year. We've accomplished some great milestones in developing and launching product. We knew that it was going to be come with its challenge because change is difficult. Yet the intangible benefit to the overall culture has certainly been a very pleasant surprise and a great accomplishment for the entire organization, including the board. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dave. So, are there any questions from the audience? Yeah, Don?
Don Hollander from APTLD. So thank you very much. I was very interested to see the last bit where an exciting place to work is driven by doing exciting things. But I know at the very beginning, you said you had a single product and a single price, and you highlighted the fact that you had a single price. Have you considered having, does that mean that you considered having different pricing structures for your names?
There's always consideration for different pricing structures, and in the scenario of, say, the promotion to the channel, we do provide discounts, but it was kind of a simplistic view of we have a domain that we offer to our channel at a single price for an annual registration. And when we could offer new products through that same channel, you have to take the engine that is used to operating on a $1.50 wholesale price and adapt it to a different price, and that came with some work.
Thank you. Leslie? Okay.
Hi, Joel Ducini, .ph. Very interesting talk. I was wondering, when you mentioned single sign-on, you're referring to OpenAuth or OpenID as a service? Is that what you were suggesting? Yes. Why would someone in Canada use Sierra for single sign-on when they can use Facebook or Google as a free single sign-on service? How would you compete with that? Why would someone use you guys for a single sign-on?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's always that element of safety, stability, and security. Working with a company that exudes those values, has their servers on the ground that you live, not in the cloud somewhere. And when you're working with context-sensitive environments, primarily people like universities and hospitals, where a student would have access to X, but a professor would have access to X plus Y, or a doctor would have access to one level of patient information and a nurse a different one, that authentication element, I believe, really has to come from an authority type organization, and Sierra certainly plays that role inside Canada.
So you would be perceived as safer than Google or Facebook, is that what you're saying, within Canada?
I think inside Canada, the simple answer is yes. So Google has its reputation of using the data that you type into its search engine for whatever purpose, and we're a different entity than that.
So, is this service live, or are you still?
No, it's just a glimmer and an idea, and it's something that we've investigated a little bit.
Okay, it's a very interesting thought process there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the presentation, Dave. How supportive are your registrars and your government about this strategy? What have you done to ensure their support, or are there still issues to work on?
Excellent question. We have involved the registrars along the way in the area of services that we're offering to them to make their business easier. They've been slow to adopt it, but with a little bit of pressure, they do resign to the fact that they'll support .ca. An example of that would be the name spinning opportunity. From a lock perspective, of our 150 registrars that we have, it's been adopted primarily by just the brand protection, corporate client style of registrar. So the adoption number has been low, yet the activity inside those adopted registrars has been high. In the DNS environment, we're very, very careful to position our managed DNS service to not compete with the registrar's DNS, and in fact complement it in that it's a secondary set of name servers. Anycast Cloud with infrastructure primarily are biased towards Canadian data centers. So it's for Canadian companies with Canadian customers. So we have servers right across Canada. The initial reaction from the registrar channel was, when they didn't understand what we were doing, was a little negative, but in isolated cases it was negative, but once they understood what we were doing and then we were offering it first and foremost to them as a service that they can upsell to their corporate environments, customers, they are very supportive of it.
And last question.
Yeah, thank you. Mohamed Shehu again from Nigeria. Yeah, in your business model presentation, you talked about channel partners. Are they something as registrars?
Yeah, when we refer to our registrars as our channel partners, yes.
So thank you very much, Dave.
Thank you.
So the next presentation will be given by Marcelo from .ar. And as we all know, hardly anyone has ever complained about lowering prices, right? When we try to increase fees for domain names, it's always, at least deep inside, we feel some fear. In case of .ar, I understand you went from zero to something.
Yeah, we did. Well, hi, everybody. My name is Marcelo Martinez. I work for Nick Argentina, .ar. Yeah, we introduced a fee for domains after a long time, March this year, so I'm going to talk a little bit about that. The presentation is uploading. So, just 1 second. It was kind of a big deal for us. So.
It would be for anyone, I think.
Yeah, of course.
So while the presentation is uploading, just a short survey here. Who has lowered their domain names fee, for example, for the last 1 year? Okay, 1, 2. Thank you. Who increased the price? Approximately same, 50-50. Okay, thank you. Marcelo, floor is yours.
Introducing a fee was a part of is a part of the update process we are going through in Argentina. It's one major milestone in our process. So, well, I wanted to talk about a little bit about that. But before, we wanted to talk when we started. This process started in 2011, and the first thing we wanted to do was build up awareness about .ar domains. What was the thing? What happened? There were a lot of domain owners, but very few people that know how to administrate it, how to delegate it, how to manage these domains. So that was the first thing. We built up communication campaigns and things like that sort. What we wanted to do was to change the user experience. We had an obsolete platform. We had an obsolete platform. We had the same platform for almost 20 years. So you can imagine it was not good. The user wasn't satisfied with it. So we changed it, we launched it, and we had a good feedback from the user. As I was telling you, we had two major milestones. In August last year, we launched our new system. We made an update on our policy. We introduced the username and password login. We built up a dashboard where you can administrate your domains. We had a whole validation process. I want to focus on that in a while. We built up our new dispute resolution system. We had it, but we relaunched it, we renamed it. And, of course, in March, as I was telling you, we introduced a fee for .ar domains. So I'm going to talk about the impact that had in our users, in our organizations, and, of course, in our registrations and renewals. First of all, validation. Are you who you say you are? What was the thing? We didn't have a solid validation process before, so we had a very particular database. For example, we had a lot of superheroes that had .ar domains. Superman, Batman, even Bugs Bunny had .ar domains. So we wanted to make sure this didn't happen. We wanted to know the Clark Kents, the Bruce Waynes. Bugs didn't show up. But we wanted the user to take responsibility. We wanted to be aware of what the domain meant and what having a domain meant. So that's why we had a solid registration policy. We cleared our database, and we started not from zero, but building up almost our dispute resolution system. We renamed it. We relaunched it. The update in our policy also introduces any domain is eligible to be disputed. Anyone can start the dispute. And the thing is, this avoids an ordinary legal process. It's much faster, it's much more comfortable, and anyone who feels the right, they have more right to own a domain, they can talk to us, they can make their claim. Of course, we're going to hear it, we're going to ask them to present their papers and everything, but they can do it all online. It's pretty simple. Zone specification, what does this mean? This will have a really big impact, and of course, how does this apply in our policy update? .ar, these domains have restrictions as to add a value to them. For example, .tour.ar, you have to be a company registered in the Ministry of Tourism. We made an agreement with the ministry, so if you want to have a .tour.ar domain, you have to be subscribed with them. They are going to tell us, and of course, we are going to check it. And if you have a .tour.ar, it means that you are a validated tourism company. This works both two ways, actually. Why? Because the domain owner certifies that he's a registered tourism company, and anyone who visits Google Apps, wants to travel to Argentina, for example, Google App, a web page, and it ends, the string ends in .tour.ar, they know that website is secured, that website is checked, and they're not going to be scammed or anything. .org, you have to be a non-profitable organization to have a .org.ar. So this goes the same way. So we wanted to create the feeling of content identity in the websites. The same goes for .net.ar. And of course, the other three that you see in the slide at the bottom, they are for governmental entities. Well, this one I wanted to talk about. Introduction of fee. After 5 years, we finally introduced it. We wanted to catch up I remember my first ICANN meeting in Beijing at the CCNCO meeting here. I was with my colleague Carlos. He raised his hand and said, "But we don't charge for domains." The room was silent. Everyone turned to us and said, what are you talking about? How many domains do you have? Almost 3 million. So, hey, guy, have you took your medication or anything? So, well, that was pretty fun for my first ICANN meeting. So, well, impact on our users. First of all, as you can see, they were not really happy. So you can, after providing a service for that long, introducing a fee, it wasn't easy. Let's talk about the price a little bit. 160 pesos is around $19 to the official exchange rate. So that's a price we feel comfortable with. It's suitable for Argentina. It's suitable for the region. It's in the average price in the region. And what we wanted to do, we wanted to turn around the user feeling about the introduction of the fee. So, of course, we had the new platform. We started appearing in social media, increasing our participation there. We improved our customer care service. We introduced the dispute resolution system. We would tell them about it. You can do this. You can claim your domain or the name of your brand or anything. DNS refreshing, this was really, really well received. Before, we refresh our DNS once a day, business day. So if you upload your site on a Saturday, you have to wait till Monday to do so. Now we are refreshing our DNS 3 hours every day, every 3 hours every day. So as I was saying before, it was time to catch up. We have a long way to go, but we're doing so. So of course, with all this, the user is happier. I don't know if we are on the right side of the slide, but we are somewhere in the middle, and we are getting there. Impact on our organization, we got a lot of improvement in our infrastructure. We clean our database. We improve our customer service. We have around 1,500 consults a day, and we are attending them, all of them. If you send us an email, we will answer you in no more than 24 hours, sometimes even less. So that was a great achievement. Well, the DNS refreshing, and now we are facing a lot of future projects with another view. We want to introduce the DNS. We want to implement DNSSEC. We want to implement IPv6. We are a governmental based institution, so we are going to start providing special service for other governmental institutions. Cybercrime. We are starting to have agreements with the cybercrime unit as to work together. That's a lot of projects we can face now, having a fee, having an independent budget. Impact on our registration and renewals. Of course, we had a decrease. We expected that, but we are better than what we expected. Our forecast was lower than this. We started with around 2.5 million domains, a little bit more, and the decrease started. Now we are around 1.5 million, but we are changing the curve. We want to stabilize this. Of course, a year hasn't passed since March, so we are expecting still downfall, but want to stabilize. We had before being free, we had a lot of registrations. These numbers are monthly. We had 30,000 registrations per month. That was a lot, and only about 8,000 renewed. That change turned around completely. We have now had 10,000 registrations per month. So, well, of course, a lot of not renewed domains. So that was expectable. But I want to finish how we started. We are updating Nick Argentina. This is a process. Introducing a fee, introducing a new platform is part of the process, major milestones, but we are continuing. The fee is like the highway metaphor. We build the highway. Afterwards, we introduce the toll booth. And what do we want to do? We want to add value to the .ar domains. With everything I just spoke with, the zone specification is a clear example. We want the .ar domain to be something different and to be something that people can relate to. So, well, that's pretty much it. So thank you very much. If you have any questions, I will be happy to answer.
thank you very much. That was very interesting. And we have a question.
Hi, Marcelo. I'm Rosalia from .cr from Costa Rica. Congratulations on your presentation and all your new projects. I just wanted to learn a little bit more about the dispute resolution process or service that you're providing. Like, could you expand on it? How does it work and how does your clients have access to that?
Yeah, sure. How does it work? When you look up a domain name, of course, it's not available. In the site, you have a button that says dispute. You can apply for the dispute. Once you apply, you have to present all the documents that prove that you have a better right to own that domain. Like, for example, if it's your brand registration, your anything like that sort. Our legal team analyze it. If that's okay, we contact the other part, the domain owner, of course. We tell them your domain is under a dispute. What do you want to do? You want to fight back, for example. And once the domain owners send us all the documents and say, no, that's my domain because my brand is something of that sort, my commercial activity is related to the domain name, we gather all that information from both parts, the domain owner and the one that's claiming that domain. And we had a third party independent from us that gather all that information and decide what will happen if one party gets it or the owner keeps it. And afterwards, we notify each of the participants with the results. And if they are not comfortable with what happened, they have the next step is just to go to the ordinary justice. But this is a quicker way as to resolve these disputes. This is in summary how it works, but the resolution is independent from us. We just manage it, we inform the two parts, and we send them to them, and then we tell the results.
Thank you. If I understand correctly, we have a question in Adobe room.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll start with Patricio, please.
Okay. Patricio Poblete from Nick Chile. I just want to congratulate our colleagues from Argentina on this very difficult transition. The first time I met people from Nick Argentina, I think, was in 97 for the white paper meeting in Buenos Aires, and then they told me that they were about to begin charging for domains. And over the years, that was always the message, and I'm glad that it finally happened, especially because you were setting a very bad example in the neighborhood.
It took us a while, we know, but, well, we finally did it, so here we are. It took us 25, almost 26 years, but we did it.
And how does your price compare with your neighbors?
We are on average. It's $19, maybe. There's a lot of Latin people here. That's about average. I don't remember exactly countries, but that's about it.
So, a question from Adobe Room.
Yes, we have two questions from the Adobe Room. The first one is from David McCauley from VeriSign. He says, Marcelo, how much prior notice did .ar give to registrants that a fee would be imposed?
Sorry, I didn't understand the last part.
How much prior notice did .ar give to registrants that a fee would be imposed?
About a couple of months before. We have a press conference. We announced we are going to start charging. We didn't say the price. We said around 200 pesos. That was what we say in the news. And well, that was pretty much it. 1 month, sorry, not 2 months. 1 month before.
Okay, and Andrew Escobar is wondering, moving from free to about $19, was is .ar sold directly by Nick Argentina, or is Nick Argentina working with a channel of registrars?
No, we actually don't work with any registrars. All the domain registration goes through us, and we are not thinking about opening a registrar right now. But of course, we thought about it. But as I was telling before, all go through us. Sorry, did you hear that?
Daniel Ebanks, .koi, Cayman Islands. I sit on the board. We are currently debating exactly what you guys have done. So I've left our business card there for us. We really would appreciate getting some time with you.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Because we are doing exactly everything that you have done. Now, I have one question for you.
Okay.
Obviously, you had pushback from the community at home. Was the biggest pushback commercial or individual members of the community, of your country? Was the biggest problem, you know, the people pushing back against this, was it from the business community, say, business associations, or was it private individuals?
It was a pretty half and half. The thing is, besides the angry face, a lot of people were happy about we started charging. Because being free, there were a lot of domainers that were getting a lot of interesting domain names, and it was difficult to work for anyone that has a project or anything. They couldn't register the domain because it wasn't available. So from that side, business and commercial entities were happy about it. 160 pesos is not that much for a year fee, so we didn't have a lot of complaints from that side, that part. Of course, people think it's always better to be free, but no, not the case.
Yes, thank you very much. I just want to add that if you're interested, then I must say that another registry, .ee, Estonia, also introduced fee not so long time ago, so they also can share experience. So thank you very much, Marcelo.
Thank you.
So our next presenter is from Serbia, and he will talk about code of ethics. I think you better move to, okay. Yeah. So who has code of ethics in their registries, officially adopted code of ethics? Anyone? Okay, no one in the room. So, Dusan, the floor is yours.
No one in the room. Okay.
We're ethical without any codes.
I don't know, .nz or some of you have some kind of documents like code of ethics. So I'm Dusan Stojičević from Serbia, and I will have a presentation about the topic that is obviously pretty rare in our CC world. Code of ethics. I don't want to have a definition or something like that. I don't want to tell you what is it, what is the code of ethics, and I don't want to talk about the history of code of ethics and how we develop it. I want to talk about core. I think first question that you will ask when I said code of ethics, why we need it? Why any CCTLD need this kind of document? Oh, just a second. Okay. Why do you need code of ethics? Do you think it's fancy? No, it's not fancy. I don't think, maybe you think that it's fancy to have one code of ethics, but I don't see it like that. Maybe some of your bosses or government ask you to do so. No, my government didn't ask us to do so. Or you think to build one long and serious document to be more serious like one organization. Or you want to use it like some weapon against enemies if you have enemies. No. There is a need in a development of your organization. You will have a need for this kind of document. So let's talk about that. In this kind of document, you will have entire organization culture. You will write every value that you want anybody who is involved in domain business to respect, and with this you will build your trust among society, among your business partners, and so on. So with this document you will build your reputation and efficient operation. Don't mess with this. Don't think about code of ethics as a policy set. This is not a policy. This is a set of values. It's a major difference between law and moral and ethics, and you cannot build this kind of document to punish somebody. You must build another document for punishing anybody. For example, every CC have a social responsibility. You can see our organization stands against all forms of inappropriate behavior, misuse of internet domains, abuse of copyrights and similar rights, abuse of the privacy, and so on. And we will pay taxes, of course. Back in Brussels, my colleague Voya was presenting similar presentation about code of ethics, and he got questions about what is the result of adopting code of ethics. Higher number of domain names gives you big income if you adopt this, or settle all of the problems with stakeholders. And the simple answer is yes and no. You have no guarantee that code of ethics will influence of number of, in number of domains in your CC, or you cannot have a big income of adopting when adopt code of ethics, but it will it is a major brick in your organization to build trust, to hire your income, that gives you a possibility for higher number of domain names. For example, when you put your money in the bank, do you read code of ethics of the bank? No. You choose the bank that you want, among other things. You don't choose if you read only code of ethics. But you watch the bank, you watch how bank is with you, how he is dealing with your money and everything, and if the bank is dealing with your money with honesty and all the values that you have in code of ethics, you that bank earn your trust, and you will put the money in that bank. So, thank you for your attention. You will have your lunch soon. So if you are interested more on this topic, I give you a link for Code of Ethics. This is not a long document, only 4 pages. You can read it. Thanks.
Thank you. So are there any questions? Well, if not, then I have a question. So how did you communicate your code of ethics to your customers, to your registrars? Or you just publish it on...
Back in May, before adoption at the General Assembly, we have, I think, year-long debate among all the stakeholders and registrars and everybody who at the time want to participate in this. So after that, we just use code of ethics in day-to-day operation.
Can your registrars subscribe to your code of ethics, adopt it for themselves? Do you encourage them, or it's just really for
your own
operation?
Yes, we encourage them to use our code of ethics, but it. There is no punishment if they don't use it.
Okay, thank you. Any more questions?
Okay.
If not, thank you very much.
Thanks.
I'm just want to correct Dusan. We still have half an hour before lunch, so. Don't give false hopes to the audience. So, and our next speaker, Hiro. Yeah, and he will tell us more about introduction of ID and labels to prefecture type .jp domain names. And even though Hiro is going to talk about .jp and DNS, you won't fall asleep. As you remember the movie, you will. No, Hiro, we won't let you sleep either. So, Hiro, the floor is almost yours. Presentation is uploading.
Yes, how can I do that? Yes. It's just there. With my finger?
If you want to go to the next one.
I see, okay. All right. Thanks. Good afternoon. My name is Hiro Hota from .jp, JPRS. So I'm going to talk about the prefecture type JP domain name and its IDN version. In around 2 years ago, I talked about the prefecture type JP domain name, the introduction of it. And I'm talking about the next story of the domain name space. Yes. This is the first phase of the prefecture type JP domain name.
Before the launch, we consult with the community about the idea of introduction of such domain name. And at that moment, there was a typical observation from the users. There would come geographic GTLDs like .Tokyo, .Osaka, and .Nagoya, and so on. But small prefectures or small cities would not have their own GTLDs, of course. And demand from the community was for us to create domain name spaces for all 47 Japanese prefectures in a neutral and homogeneous way. Neutral and homogeneous means that is not to focus on domain name spaces only for big prefectures or cities, as business-oriented registries might do. So prefecture type JP domain name was launched in November 2011. The format is something like Tokyo.jp. And the main purpose is vitalizing or visualizing local activities. And the basic policies of the registration is registration as third level domain. Any organization or individual can be a registrant, and local presence in the prefecture is not required, as in the case with other JP domain namespace. And multiple domain names can be registered by one registrant, and the registration in all 47 domain name spaces is managed by us. Not the space is not delegated to the local government or some other organization. We do manage. And the number of prefecture type JP registration is it's going up in 1 year, and after the renewal, it goes a little bit reduced, and again, it's growing. I think this is the typical number of registration trend. And the trend of registration for the trademark, many national brands register as a prefecture type JP domain name. And 29 levels apply for in all 47 prefectures, and ASCII 20 identity 9. So this means that the 20 strings are applied for all 47 prefectures and 9 IDMs. And they are product or service names with nationwide market and company names with branches all over Japan. And prefectures with largest number of applications was in Tokyo. As you may know, that's the top in population as well. And .kyoto.jp, it's in the 13th in population, but it's hidden, but the Kyoto is famous for its scenic or temples or historic landscape. And land rush application, many common nouns were applied and registered. For example, for ASCII, blog.kanagawa.jp or magazine.chiba.jp. Kanagawa and Chiba are the names of the prefecture. For IDMs, beautysalon.aichi.jp or familyaltar.toyama.jp. The first beauty salon is in Japanese, Biyoshitsu, and so on. And first come, first serve. The voices. Local branding, such as local mascot characters and speciality products, can be promoted by prefecture type JP in all 47 prefectures. It is set by advertisement agency. And Net Business Consultant said that with prefecture type JP, local business can profile themselves as local and attract attention from local community. In addition, search engines may empower potential clients in finding them. And restaurants say prefecture type JP interests audience in IT seminars hosted by local chamber of commerce or local government. And nationwide uniqueness of a domain name has been a hurdle to register a good name, even for local use. This means that the something.jp is nationwide uniqueness. And nationwide uniqueness is a good thing for some persons or some companies, but it's not good for local operated companies. So prefecture type JP is a trigger to create more websites for them to be more attractive to local. And ideas in prefecture type JP. We have two types of IDN registration. One is a general use type. It's registered on the second level. In total, we have 936,000 second level registration. The amount of that, 121,000, are IDNs. For prefecture type, 3,000 among 12,000 are IDNs. So this means that the 25% of the prefecture type domain names are IDNs. Although 13% are the IDNs on second level domain. So next step of prefecture type JP, we are thinking about and we are developing IDN prefecture labels on the second level. By this service, more IDN flavor in prefecture type JP will enable higher impression of the domain labels. Local product's name followed by prefecture name, where both names are in Japanese string, would give more good impression than English strings, and higher SEO scores of domain names that embrace exact search keywords. This is a service to be launched in next month, and the format is something that like something.tokyo.jp, Tokyo. These two characters means Tokyo. For example, tower.tokyo.jp. I think that's it. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Hiro. Any questions from the audience? If not, then I have a question, at least one. First, do you differentiate price for IDNs and non-IDNs, ASCII?
Yes, some difference. IDNs are cheaper than ASCII because we want to promote the IDN domains.
And I think it works very well. And another one that's probably my problem. Well, for me, they all look confusingly similar, but I believe for you the picture is a bit different. But anyway, how do you solve this issue of confusing similarity?
Confusing similarity for what?
For IDN domain names.
So. IDN and IDN.
IDN and IDN, yeah.
Usually, the strings in Japanese script we do differentiate all of them. For example, as a domain registration rule, they are treated as different. All of the characters are different. Usually in Japanese newspapers or books, it's usual readers who are Japanese can differentiate the small difference of the font. So we think that it's not a big problem to differentiate the very similar characters. And we launched IDMs in 2001, and we haven't got any claims or challenges for that.
So there's no single case when somebody complained about confusing.
Right.
Oh, that's interesting. And then another question. So you do have this prefectures not in ASCII but in IDN format as well.
Right. Yes, both.
Okay. So those who have registered in ASCII, for example, Kyoto.jp in ASCII and in IDN, they bundle.
Good question. First, they are bundled. So something dot IDN Tokyo.jp or and something dot ASCII Tokyo.jp. The restaurants should be the same for the first registration. But after that, the restaurant can decide one of that they transfer one of them to other restaurant. That's the rule.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions from the audience? If not, then I would like to wrap up this session.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Hiro. So what we heard today, as I see it, that's really not news for any of us, that the numbers of domain name registrations slowly decreasing. And we as registries have to look into ways to secure our incomes. And there are different strategies to do that. One is to provide new services and charge for new services and so diversify risks. Another way is you can introduce higher price, basically. any price. Yeah. I'm really surprised how you survived before that. There are some other not so traditional approaches. Registry can be more open and try to attract new registration by, for example, providing higher standards of ethics or by inviting a community to participate in the process, in the development of their CCTLD, and thus stimulating the demand and just building image for your CCTLD. But as Patrick showed us today, we all have different frameworks where we operate in, and one size does not fit all CCTLDs, and that is the case. Nothing we can do, we can just come together, share information, and learn from each other. Therefore, I'm very thankful to all the presenters here today. Thank you very much. Thank you for sharing. And I just want to invite other CCTLDs. Don't be shy. Send us your requests for a presentation slot for the upcoming meetings. Next one is in Marrakesh. We'll have, again, CCTLD news. Even though probably most of our time will be taken by discussions about IANA, we still have slots for news from our members, not only members, actually. Any CCTLD can give a presentation, and anyone is welcome. So thank you very much for participating here. We still have 10 minutes, but I won't keep you here. Sorry? Yes, I promise to sing if we have if we have some more minutes, but I see that people are leaving the room and before you all gone, you see nobody wants to hear me singing. So thank you very much. We reconvene at 2 with more and more interesting discussions and sessions. So see you soon. Thank you very much.